This is the Ultimate Attorney Podcast, the podcast for small law firms who want to create a thriving legal practice. Each week, we'll uncover the ways that you can improve your referrals, your marketing, and your business operations, helping you to generate more revenue and elevating your life and your law practice. In each episode, we'll tap into some of the closest guarded secrets from industry titans, thought leaders, and legal specialists. We're glad that you've tuned in. And once again, it's time to help you become an ultimate attorney. Hey, everybody. Dre Redfern here.
And Alexis Neely.
And we are so glad to have you back with us in the Ultimate Attorney Podcast, where today we're going to talk about building a team, building a legal team around you as the attorney inside of your business.
Yeah, and it's so important that you begin to think about this if you truly want to be an ultimate attorney and really have the life that you desire while still being able to provide the best quality legal services and have systems and structures in your in place so that you can love your life and love your law practice. And I know, Dre, that there are so many attorneys out there who just think, oh, I just want to be a solo attorney. I just want to do it all on my own. And what I'm hoping is that maybe we could start with helping the lawyers who are listening in on this, who have that kind of mindset, see why that mindset is going to keep them stuck and keep them from ever being able to be the ultimate attorney.
Oh, 100%. You know, it's, you know, there's no, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day and it certainly wasn't built by a single person. And I think that any business really takes more than one person to build. Even if you're the face of the business, even if you're the one doing all of the main work and you're the one dotting the I's and crossing the T's and all of that, you still need to have a team of people around you. And maybe that's just an assistant part-time if you're really just moonlighting as an attorney. Mm-hmm. Or if you have your own law practice and you're hanging up your own shingle and you're trying to make it work, you know, how do you have the team around you that can start to take things off of your plate so that maybe they can handle the administrative work, or maybe they can handle the things that you don't necessarily enjoy as much? Because let's be honest, there's those aspects in every single business with every single person. So how can you start taking more of those things off of your plate, having the right people take them for you so that you can focus on the assets or the systems or the skills that bring in the most amount of revenue, that offer the biggest impact, and frankly, the stuff that you enjoy the best?
Yeah, well, and I think a lot of lawyers, and this was certainly the case for me when I went out on my own, I was sure I couldn't afford to have a team. And, you know, back with that kind of thinking, I was probably right. So I was trying to do everything myself. And I'd love to just paint the picture of those early days in practice. I had left the big law firm. I'd left the six-figure paycheck. My husband's a stay-at-home dad. We don't have any money in the bank whatsoever. So I'm totally terrified financially, right? And because I have to make it work. I didn't even have money to be able to pay rent. I had to rent my office space from another attorney by trading for my time. So I'm trading 20 hours a month in exchange for my rent. And I am in one of the best buildings in my local community. I decided to, you know, kill the 1 hour commute each way. My son had just been born. So my daughter was about 4 years old, 3 and a half. 4 years old, and my son was a, you know, little tiny baby, and I never did go back from my maternity leave. So I am now returning from maternity leave into my own practice in this high-rise building in our local community. It was in Redondo Beach, California, is where we lived, and the building was in Torrance, California. And I'm trading my time, and even buying furniture for my little office that I had. You know, I went to the used furniture store. I, you know, used my personal credit card, which, by the way, was a huge mistake and something that we should definitely talk about in a future episode, Dre, is like how to finance your law practice, how to find the money to do it. I had some really creative ways. In this case, I used my personal credit card. And I bought this huge desk. And so I'm sitting on one side of the desk, and I have my sister sitting on the other side of the desk, setting up my bookkeeping systems. By the way, that was a huge mistake too. I had her doing it because, you know, she would work for really cheap, but she wasn't a bookkeeper. She had no idea what she was doing. That was a costly hire for me for sure. And it was probably about 4 to 6 months into the practice where I realized I cannot do this alone. I need to have support. I'm spending my time doing things that somebody else could be doing for $15, $20 an hour. And
if that sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. And so I ended up, the attorney that I was trading my time with, he had an assistant. And I ended up hiring her on and paying her for some of the hours that she worked. Well, I'll tell you what, this was another big mistake. It actually cost me money to bring her on and cost me time to bring her on because she was the worst assistant ever. So I was spending more time now because I was trying to cheap out, right? So I didn't even know how to look for my own person. So I, just hired whoever was there, and I ended up spending more time and money to try and go the cheap route than I would have if I would have actually thought like a business person, thought like an ultimate attorney about how can I really find the right person who is going to be able to support me, starting off on a part-time basis because I really didn't have enough work for somebody full-time, but then ultimately be able to grow with me on a full-time basis. And ultimately, I was able to do that. Ultimately, I was able to do that once. It was probably about 2 months in, and I realized I am paying this person to make mistakes and that I then have to clean up. This is not working out very well. So I'm going to find the right person. I'm going to train this person. And ideally, this person is going to be somebody who can grow with me. And that's exactly what I did. I found somebody who would be able to grow with me. And she did. In fact, she continues. This is now, it's been, gosh, that was what, 2003. So it's been almost 15 years, and she actually still works for me on a very, very, very part-time basis handling my calendar. And it's because I was able to find the right person because of the way that I advertised for her, the way that I screened. We're going to be talking about that on today's episode, and the way that I prepared her for what I was going to have her do. Now, before we talk about that, just the one piece that I want to make sure that we go into is for those of you that are scared to hire somebody because of the money. You don't have the money. You're not sure where the money's going to come from. The idea of supporting somebody else besides yourself is really terrifying. So, Dre, do you have any ideas of, you know, how do we help these lawyers who are super terrified about the money piece see that it's actually more costly not to have somebody supporting them
100%
than it is to, yeah, be willing to hire and pay somebody?
Yeah, exactly. So really, I was in that same boat when I started off. It's just, I'm going to do everything myself because I can, because I'm Superman.
Yeah.
And anyone else that I hire is going to be subpar compared to me.
Yeah.
And so it's not worthwhile to hire anybody because they're not going to be as good as I am.
Yeah.
Like no matter how, like what role you play in the business or what your key strengths are, everyone thinks that to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. We're starting our own business. We're hanging up our own shingle. Everyone has a certain amount of it's just an ego, as far as I'm going to get this job done better than anyone else. Mm-hmm. But when I finally came to the realization, okay, I can't do this myself, I then did exactly what you did, Allie. It's just trying to find the least expensive person possible, to get things done. And it just tanked. It was just, I would have to go back and spend more time fixing other issues, for people who were just not qualified or not even able to do these things. And so what I found was a good mixture of initial team building. So what I mean by that is for the people who were initially concerned of, the cost to build something. There are so many outsourced, places you can go for outsourced work, whether it's like Upwork.com or like a Fiverr.com, or even hiring like a full-time assistant in somewhere like the Philippines because they speak English. Mm-hmm. And so that was the route that I did and really, pursued for a long time because I could do it. I could scale it. These people had their skill sets and I could really just oversee and act as the project manager instead of having to do initial design work and copywriting and all of these things initially. And that worked great. Once I actually figured that out, and actually finding the right people and you build your right team of outsourced contractors, that's the easiest place to start in relation to work that's easily outsourced. That's marketing. That could be sales to a certain degree. That could be some process creation or even a project manager for certain things. But then the next question is like, okay, that's good, but that can only take you so far inside of your business because you need someone there for day-to-day operations. And that's when it gets scary. And that's like, that's the next jump that a lot of individuals don't necessarily make. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, and Ali, I'm excited to have you share your process for hiring those individuals. When I made that next commitment, so the first commitment, I guess I would say, is like recognizing I needed help. The second part was like building a team of just completely outsourced contractors. And then the third step was essentially building a team in-house. And now when I made that commitment, as scary as it was, business went up by 30% in the first 60 days. Just because I had more people to take more work off of my my plate so that I could focus on what some, you know, many entrepreneurs call their stupid human trick, meaning that thing that you're just is your main skill set. It's your superhero ability that allows you to focus on that. And literally business just went up overnight. And it's crazy how that happens, but it was that commitment that made it really occur that way.
Yeah, it does really start with a commitment. It starts with a commitment. Now, I don't want you to make this commitment blindly. One of the things that you can absolutely use to support you here is our cash flow forecast planning tool. And you'll find in the show notes and on the website for the show how to get that cash flow forecast planning tool. And you can use that to show yourself exactly what you need to be doing in order to be able to pay yourself and somebody else. And when I say exactly what you need to be doing, in your case, what that is going to mean is engaging clients. Okay, when you know exactly how many clients you need to engage and at what average fee you need to engage them each month in order to be able to pay yourself and somebody else, all of a sudden, all of the pieces begin to click into place. Now, this does require you to have a really clear understanding that you know how to engage clients and that you know what your average fees are for engaging those clients. And, you know, if you follow me here for any amount of time, you know that I'm a huge fan of you working in a practice area that allows you to systematize things like your fee quoting and your packages and not be charging by the hour and instead be systematizing your practice. And that's certainly going to make things a lot easier. If you are still charging by the hour because you're in some sort of a litigation practice where you have to do that and you can't really systematize, well, then at least you need to know for yourself how many hours you need to be billing per month to be covering yourself and a team member. And once you see that, it should be pretty easy to see that if you're billing out your hourly time at even as low as $125 an hour, which is really low. I mean, I'm imagining you should be at least at $250. You know, some of you are at $350, $450 an hour. Well, then of course, having somebody who is charging you $15, $20, even $50 an hour can be worth it if you are investing your time educating your community, which is something that probably you're the best at, probably only you could do when you know how to do it really well, whether that's through networking or presentations or just creating marketing materials and then engaging the clients. Okay, that's like the first basic step that you need to have in place. And once you know how to engage clients for your services, of course, it makes sense for you to hire somebody to do all of the things that make it give you more time to get out there and educate your community and engage those clients. So one of the things that you could do is you could start by making a list of all of the things that you do that are not educating your community, that are not engaging the clients, that somebody else could do. And we're going to talk in our next episode about how to train somebody to do those things. As lawyers, we have not been taught how to train people. And as a result, you might be hiring great people and then not training them well, and then losing them. So we're going to talk about that in our next episode. But now that you're starting to see, okay, if I know how to engage clients and I know how to educate my community and get my phone ringing, it doesn't make any sense for me not to have other people doing the things that allow me to do more of that. Because when I do that, money comes into the firm. And now it's just a matter of how do I find the right people?
And so you're 100% right on this, Allie, and that actually becomes a scalable asset, something that you can actually take and then you can grow. But as you said, and I think it's worth rehashing to a certain degree, is that you need to, you know, build in some systems and some processes, which if you want to build a business, not just a law business, but any business, you got to have some of that stuff. And we've talked a little bit about that previously, but if you have those things, that makes, like, when that individual, that team member comes in, it makes it so easy for them, that person, just really get up and running as fast as possible to help you. And as Allie said, if you're paying them $15, $20, $25, even $50 an hour, and you're billing out at $250 or $500 or whatever the number may be, that's really easy to just arbitrage that the difference in price to really have them focus on the stuff that maybe is not your number one skill set or what you're billing at, and allow you to focus on the stuff that brings in the revenue. So it's not uncommon. Like I've seen this literally dozens and dozens of times where people are so afraid to make that commitment. But once they have that person in that role and they really get up to speed and they're following those systems and processes, that businesses just like go through that hockey stick growth where it's been like flat, 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 flat. Then all of a sudden they bring that new assistant or that paralegal or that associate on, whoever is maybe going to take that work off their plate. And then the firm just goes, you know, exponential growth. And that's the exciting stuff. That's the stuff that we all live for.
Yeah. Yeah. And when we're training our estate and business planning lawyers, what we typically see is the first person that they should bring on is what we call the client services director. That was the first person that I brought on. And in the beginning, my client services director, well, she was doing more than if I had her full time and my practice was full, that she would be doing. But in the beginning, my client services director, she was supporting me to do outreach, getting me booked to do speaking engagements. She was supporting me to do intake, greeting, you know, following up whenever I did a speaking engagement with the people who had turned in their lead forms. And she was, I had to teach her to do that, by the way. I had to teach her to do everything. My first client services director, the woman who is still with me today, just handling my calendar, she was a kindergarten teacher before coming to work with me. And then she, you know, she came to learn everything because of how I trained her, which we'll share in the next episode. But she was doing, as I said, the outreach, she was doing the intake, and then she was also shepherding my clients through the process. Once they engaged me, she was following our systems to take them through the whole process so that they turned into raving fans. Now, once we began to grow, once we got beyond like 5 new clients a month, she could no longer do all of those things. Instead, I had to start peeling off pieces, and I had to hire an outreach coordinator, somebody who was just working on outreach. And eventually I needed to hire somebody who was doing the intake, right? I grew big enough that as things started to expand, I needed to peel these roles apart. And then my client services director, she was just focused on taking care of my clients and doing some office manager work, office manager type work as well, helping me to keep things going in the office. And she was no longer doing things like the outreach or the intake. So it's really important when you are hiring that you are really clear exactly what it is that you are hiring for and what are the natural capabilities, qualities of somebody that that go along with that. And what I'd love to do is kind of just share with you this little piece on how do you find the right people to work with that really helped me tremendously. And I actually got it in a different context. The context that I got it from was a book called Perfect Customers, how to Attract Your Ideal Customers, something like that, which is a great book, by the way. And in that book, I learned this little strategy. It's kind of based on the law of attraction. So it's a little bit woo-woo, but it really works. And the first step is to get really clear about the qualities and the characteristics of the person that you're looking for. So for example, the quality and the characteristics of, you know, somebody that I'm looking for to be like a file clerk is not going to be the same qualities and characteristics of somebody that I'm looking for to be a client services director or an outreach coordinator. So if I was hiring completely separate people, one to be an outreach coordinator and one to be a client services director, I'd want my client services director to be super detail-oriented, able to follow systems, maybe even able to create systems. But I don't want my outreach coordinator to be like that. I want my outreach coordinator to be really outgoing, personable, somebody who's got sales background, right? Because they're going to be reaching out to people on my behalf.
And hopefully closing them.
Yes. Well, and then that's the case for the intake person, right? If I have somebody doing intake, I want to make sure that that person is really good at conveying the value of what we do, right? And so you've got to really understand who is this person? Who is this person? And list out all of their qualities and characteristics. And really consider, like, who is the kind of person that you want to be working with as well? And that's a place that many people stop. Okay. So many people, when they're doing this kind of stuff, they list out all the qualities and the characteristics of that specific person. And that is a great and critical first step. But I don't want you to miss the second step. And the second step is you need to make a list of all the reasons that you are the best person for that person to work for. Why is your firm the best job that that person could possibly have? Because it's having both sides of that looped together that are going to ensure that you find somebody who is a really great fit and worth you investing in training, because they're going to stay with you for the long haul.
I love that. And it's actually just repositioning the whole attitude that so many businesses have, is that I'm just going to hire this person to fill a specific role, or I'm going to help them get me to the next level, and then they're gone. I'm going to get somebody else. Mm. Like this very, like, almost like big corporate-y feel. And that's not what you're building. You want to build a team. You want to build people who can, you can rely on, and they can rely on you. And I love the framework of it. When you build a team, and you invest in the training, that you're literally building that team for the long haul to make sure that they stay around. Obviously, you can outgrow people. Some people want to just change directions with their career, whatever the scenario may be. But I just think that's so important when you reposition the idea of a team, and that you're actually building something for the long haul that's actually going to be sustainable. I think that shift is so important in today's business culture.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and, you know, it's really interesting. I was talking with one of my business advisors yesterday, and what he was telling me is that in the past, baby boomers like stayed with their jobs something like, you know, 20 to 30 years, and Gen Xers like 15 years, and millennials mm-hmm. only are staying with their jobs 2 years. So what does this tell us? Well, it tells us a couple things. No, it doesn't tell us not to hire millennials. Many lawyers would say that. Well, I'm just not going to hire millennials. That's actually not realistic. Millennials are great team members. What it tells us is that you've really got to focus on creating an environment that people want to work in. And as lawyers, we aren't always the best at that. I think we'll talk about that in the next episode as well, because I think it is part of building a team is creating a culture where people want to come to work. And what do you need to do in order to do that? And also, how can that same culture contribute to a reality where if and when people do leave, it is easy for you to bring on the next person because you've got systems? And it really does all come down to you creating a system, starting place of finding the right people to work in your office and to work with you, because this is probably going to be the single biggest determiner of how big your practice can grow and how much ease your practice can grow. It's easy to learn how to engage clients. I know that might not seem that way right now if you're not yet engaging clients, but it really is. It's like once you get that down, you've got it down, and you could just repeat it again and again and again and again, engaging clients. Once you figure out how to get the word out about your practice and the specifics of your practice to the people that you serve, it just happens again and again and again. But people, you know, managing people, that's the one variable that can be the stopping place for most lawyers, especially because some of us aren't necessarily the most aware about our impact on people. We intimidate people. We don't necessarily know we're intimidating people. We think we're smarter. We think we're better. And so getting this piece down, hiring the right people, creating a system for that is going to be a big factor in how much you're able to grow and with how much ease. So It starts with this process that I just shared with you, making the list of the qualities and the characteristics of the person that you are looking for. Now, also, I want to make a note here. Give that job a title. So you're not just hiring a receptionist or a file clerk or a paralegal as most, or an assistant. I really strongly recommend against that. Instead, I want you to give this job a title that is indicative of the specific outcomes that you want this job to reach. So I called my person a client services director because I knew that this person was going to be taking care of our clients. So that just imprinted right from the beginning that that was what the outcome was. We also had a client services specialist. We had a relationship manager. We had an outreach specialist. We eventually had an intake manager. We had a funding coordinator, somebody who was just focusing on funding our clients' plans. So you give these titles, right? The broadest one is client services director. You list out all of the characteristics and qualities, not just what they're going to be doing, but who they need to be in order to be doing a great job, and then why they would want to work for you. Why would they want to work for you? What is great about working for you? And then you're going to turn that into an ad. Now, your ad isn't going to be like, hiring a paralegal and here's your duties and list out your duties. Instead, you want to create an ad that is compelling, that really conveys your personality, your style, the way that your firm is different and who you are and what makes you different. And then at the end of the ad, you want to give very specific instructions that this person, anybody applying, has to complete in order to make it through your screening process.
I can't stress the importance of that part enough, actually, Allie. I think that, I think it may be helpful if we can give everyone maybe as a download all of the resource or the names that you call these positions. I think that may be a huge help to the audience.
Yeah.
But I think that in general, that what you just said right there was literally the complete game changer in our own hiring process. Mm. So our specific protocol that we follow, just like, you mentioned, we have someone submit their resume just like they do to everybody. And if you get, put it on Indeed or Monster or any of those job sites, everyone just blasts their resume to everybody. But we took it two steps further. We said, also submit a personalized cover letter with your resume as to why you would be a good fit for the position. Mm. And most people didn't do that. And if they did do that, they didn't take the next step, which was for us, submit a 3 to 5 minute video that explains who you are and why you think you'll be a good fit. So it's just a little bit extra layer deeper than the cover letter, the personalized cover letter. Now, here's what all of that did. Now, because some people are very afraid of being on video, and that's fine, but we were, it was just part of our process and it worked for us. Mm-hmm. But making people jump through those hoops was really a determining factor, because it goes from having maybe, say, 100 people just blast you with their resume to maybe only 15 or 20 send the resume and a personalized cover letter, to maybe only 5 people submit the resume with the personalized cover letter with the video. And you know that those people are so gung-ho to learn more about you and explore that opportunity. And they're the ones who are willing to actually read and follow directions, which is extremely important. But then also taking the extra steps ahead of time before money or any consideration has actually occurred in order to really show you what they're all about. I think that's that point right there, Allie, I think is so key.
Yeah. And in my office, what we did is we had them send us an email, and in the subject line, they had to write very specific words that said, "I am the one." And if they didn't do that, they didn't I didn't even open the email. It just got deleted. So it saved me a lot of time on screening, because if they didn't follow that very simple instruction, they just didn't even make it to the next stage. So I know that we're coming towards the end of the episode here, and there's just a few other things that I want to make sure that that we get clear for you. And I will ask one of my team members to put together that list, as well as a sample of one of our ads that we use, so that you could see what I'm talking about when I say, let your personality shine through. Let the personality of your firm really shine through. And the next thing that I want to say about this, and by the way, we'll let you know how to get that in the show notes and on the website. The next thing that I want to say about this is how important it is that when you are hiring people, you have the right insurance in place. And I did not have the right insurance in place. And, you know, Dre, I know.
I know a little bit about.
You might, yeah, you know a little bit about this. I did not have the right insurance in place. I ended up getting sued by a team member. And this is a big risk for you. In fact, I would guess, and I wonder if you know of any stats on this, that the biggest risk to business owners who have actual businesses with employees is from the potentiality of getting sued by a team member. And it cost me a lot. I didn't have the right insurance in place for it. And I ended up having to do a 5-figure settlement, not because I was in the wrong. I was not. I'm very certain that I was in the right, but I could not afford to fight the lawsuit. And as your business grows, as your practice grows, and you have some people that come in and they see your success, they're going to want a piece of it. And I wish that I had had the kind of insurance that would have backed me up on that claim so I could have fought it and not had to give in to what turned into a 5-figure settlement.
You know what, Allie? Maybe we turn that into an episode in and of itself here in the future, because there's a lot of stuff that we could probably share from my knowledge the last 10 years in that field and the experience that you had. Maybe we just turn that into a whole episode in and of itself here in the future.
All right, great. Well, let's definitely do that. I would love to do that, because having the right insurance is so key. And I think there's a lot of people, me certainly, who just try to skimp on insurance. And frankly, I didn't even know what it was that I needed. Maybe if I would have been told that that even existed, I would have gotten it in place, but I didn't even know that it existed. So it really does start with you hiring the right people. And if you hire the right people, hopefully you'll never have to use your insurance. I did not know how to hire the right people when I first started out in practice, and I made a lot of bad hires. And then it does come down to knowing how to train them for success, so that they stay with you ideally forever. And some of my team members did. I have 3 team members who have worked with me more than 15 years to this day. And I've had a lot of team members go as well, because I just didn't know how to train. And so in our next episode of the Ultimate Attorney Podcast, we are going to be talking about how to train your team so that they want to stay with you forever and they want to help you grow your firm, and so they don't become resentful, and so that ultimately they can become successful and help you be successful as well.
I love it, and so looking forward to it, Allie.
All right, see y'all there. Hey guys and gals, if you liked this show and you want to help us out so we can keep making more of these episodes for you, please go on over to iTunes and give us a 5-star review right now. And to reward you for that, every single month we'll be doing a drawing of 1 5-star reviewer and giving away either our estate planning bootcamp, our business practice bootcamp, or Dre's attorney essentials or legal marketing fundamentals. These programs would be purchased separately for $1,000 to $3,000. Though, of course, they're worth way more to that to your law practice. So go do that now while you remember and get entered. We really appreciate it. And hey, after you do that, head on over to ultimateattorneypodcast.com, where you can check out even more episodes, see what episodes are coming up, submit questions for us to answer on future episodes, and most importantly, get a whole bunch of super valuable law business building resources that we've put together for you to support you to become the ultimate attorney and have a life and law practice you love. We so look forward to seeing you in the next episode of the Ultimate Attorney Podcast.